Anything that goes bump in the night is fair game. Welcome to Utah Para Radio, right here on UtahParanormal.net.
All right, good evening, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to the Owl Nest here on Thursday night with your host Brett Matson and Josh Elmer.
That's kind of that. All right,
yeah,
you hear every time.
I know.
That's your signature.
It's a habit.
No, it's good. It's good. No problem.
All right, well, tonight we have a special guest with us on air right now. His name's Antonio. He's from Aerial Phenomena. And they are a UFO investigative team that have done quite a bit.
I was just going to say, can you still hear us there, Antonio?
Yeah, I can still hear you guys.
All right. Let's have you go ahead and kind of explain a little bit about who you guys and where you're from and what you're all about.
Well, pretty much we're a UFO investigation, actually it's an aerial phenomena investigations team here out of the Washington, D.C. metro area. You know, pretty much what distinguishes us from other UFO investigation teams out there is that we don't necessarily see UFO chasers. We don't go around, you know, setting up cameras at night in hopes of detecting some type of UFO. We're a nuts and bolts investigations team. So pretty much what we do is we receive, you know, dozens of reports throughout the month. And we use an investigative process to try to determine whether or not that sighting can be attributed to A, a man-made object, B, something that's natural phenomena, and lastly, is something that we don't know, you know, possibly extraterrestrial. And I say possibly extraterrestrial because, you know, evidence of any type of extraterrestrial life is elusive as ever. You know, you can pretty much put in the same categories as either Bigfoot, leprechauns, you name it. There's a lot of reports out there, but we just haven't gotten that physical proof beyond a reasonable doubt that aliens do exist. So that's what we do. You know, our intent is hopefully in this lifetime that we have is that maybe one day we will find that proof that extraterrestrial life does exist. And I think more importantly regarding our team is that we kind of take away the extraterrestrial element out of the equation. We don't really entertain conspiracy theories, specifically that the government's hiding stuff, you know, or that, you know, aliens are using time travel or that we have anti-gravity devices. We take that all out of the equation and we specifically concentrate on the nuts and bolts of the report. And I think that's what makes us different, and that's what really distinguishes us from a lot of the UFO investigation teams throughout the world.
Absolutely. Now, I also know that you guys come from your backgrounds for your members. I mean, you guys aren't just, you know, the guy flipping the burger down the street. You guys come from quite a different, how do I phrase this, careers.
Sure. You know, I started the organization alone. And what happened was, you know, I've always been interested in UFOs probably about 12 to 15 years. And, you know, I was a federal agent at one time and decided to move on to better things as a consultant. And so I also went to grad school for planetary science. And when I graduated, I pretty much converged my two backgrounds, the education I received and my investigative skills, and decided, hey, maybe I should just do my own UFO team. You know, I went around, did a couple of those local meetings, MUFON, Virginia, MUFON, Maryland, etc. And, you know, good meetings, and it was during those meetings that I met a couple of teams, a couple of those MUFON team members, and said, hey, why don't we, you know, we don't need to actually be part of any organization, we can just do this ourselves. And so I went around for a couple of months and started hosting recruiting meetings, and I did some interviews, and that's where I got the majority of my team. They're all professionals, you're right. You know, I've got everybody from a satellite engineer at NASA to a retired pilot, former FBI investigator, you name it. But the one thing that you really don't know about the team is that we're really, when it comes to the belief of extraterrestrials, we're all spread out throughout the spectrum. We've got half the team that are, skeptics, and the other half that really believe that there's something out there. And I think that's why I specifically chose the team that way, because this is something that we need to debate internally. You know, we get a report, and we do a case mission analysis. And so we debate, you know, throughout all these cases, whether or not, you know, there is extraterrestrial life. So.
Oh, absolutely. I could completely relate with what you're saying about, you know, within your group, you have the different spectrums of belief systems behind it, because I'm the same way with my team. My paranormal research team is, we have the same thing. We have skeptics, we have believers, and everything in between. And yeah, we could carry on with some serious conversations for hours and really kind of make you think.
So we might all have different types of beliefs, which is great. Nevertheless, we do have a process. You know, we don't just do investigations nilly-willy. I took, you know, various standard operative procedures out there, from FBI investigations manuals to Department of Defense investigation manuals to others. I've got about 30 different books here on how to investigate UFOs. Put them all together, took out the best pieces of how I think we should carry out these investigations, and we follow that process. We have a case protocol, you know, from cradle to grave. We receive a case all the way to how do we dispose the case. So even though we all have different beliefs, we all follow the same investigative process in my SOP, and, you know, we just don't do things willy-nilly or, hairs in our backs or gut feelings. So we all follow the process so that we all come to the same conclusion. You know, we all have a little belief in there, and sometimes those beliefs shape the investigations. But, you know, we always get together at the beginning of the case, mid-case, and the end of the case, and try to come up with a reasonable closing of the case.
That's brilliant.
Yeah,
that's where
right.
I operate, so I definitely like that. Now, I was looking on your website the other day. I know Ken and Kathy have been talking with you quite a bit. We actually have a history of whenever we have a guest that's supposed to come on the show, their car always breaks down. So,
and that's what happened tonight.
Yeah, they had a flat tire.
Yeah.
They live a good distance away from us, so it's probably about 45 minutes for a drive. But, I was looking on your website. One of the things I noticed that was quite amazing is I was looking at the way you put together your reports. Now, I know you don't put everything on there, and a lot of stuff is confidential, which, you know, anybody who's serious about it has to keep things to themselves. But the way you lay out the report, the way you go through the details, the way you explain not only different angles but everything else behind it, what is some advice that you give? I mean, not necessarily, you know, aerial investigators, but just investigators in general, what would you say would be a couple of the key things to do to make sure you're doing it right?
I would say make sure, obviously, you have a process. You know, an investigative cycle is what I call it, not necessarily an investigative process. A good investigative cycle, but that you leave no turns unturned, no stones unturned, because, some cases are open and shut cases, really, you know, just by looking at the photo or the witness testimony. In some cases, take longer than others. And, you know, I wish I have my guide here, and it tells me, you know, if A equals B, then, and I go to the next step, just follow the process. And more importantly, at least for this UFO investigation, is don't let, I like to say conspiracy theorists and all those other organizations out there derail your case or try to steer you or shift the investigation, that's out of the scope of your standard operating procedure. Stick to whatever process that your organization came up with, and just stick to that. But also, leave a little room for, you know, imagination. Leave a little room for, thinking not too far out of the box, because thinking too far out of the box sometimes gets you in trouble, but kind of look a little bit outside of the box. A good example is this morning I had a case. I have a case now out of the UK, and, I went through the investigative process 3 or 4 times, and I didn't want to close the case, so I just went out to this entomologist out of the UK just to see if this might be a bug, you know, not just an orb. So now I'm reaching out to the entomology community just to, you know, make sure that I leave no stone unturned.
Right.
So, a quick, short answer is stick to your whatever processes you guys use, but however, leave some room for ingenuity and imagination.
Brilliant. And how do you go about contacting people of other qualifications, I guess you would phrase it?
Research. Do the right research, on the internet or whatever resources you have. But I like to stick to people, academia or et cetera, that have some type of credentials. So, back to that same example, I just researched entomologists in the UK and found the Royal Society of Entomology, very prestigious organization. I didn't think they were going to respond to me, and I was amazed that one of the professors actually responded and said, we'll help you out. So, here we have a case that I was about to close, and now I'm going to keep a lid open now because I have some professionals overseas that are going to look at this orb to see if it's some kind of firefly or something. So, because of what resources you use, I just finished a documentary, and I speak on that documentary. I just talk about a good 5-10 minutes on how much junk and how much the internet is just littered with junk science, conspiracy sites that just derail, whether it's the paranormal or ufology. Six incredible sources is probably the best I can say.
Absolutely. Now, kind of tell us, how long have you been around? How long have you been doing this?
Well, personally, I've been looking at UFO, I would just say research, for about 12 years, and actual investigations, I'd say about 5. However, the Aerial Phenomena Investigations team, we just set up in October, so almost a year. Just October.
So the team's been together for almost a year, but you've been doing it for quite a bit longer than it sounds like.
Not as detailed as this. I didn't have a process like this. It was more like I call it an armchair investigator. Sit here and just Google and read all these blogs and stuff like that. And that's good for research, but that's not an investigation. Investigators, you need to go out and interview people, if there's any evidence, do your field visits. A lot of things that require you to get out of that chair and go out to the field, that's the open investigations. And then coming back and putting all that data together and coming up with an analytical conclusion of what you think the anomaly is.
Right. Now, I didn't want to cut you off, but we just had 2 people kind of come into the studio right now. I think it's the 2 people we've been waiting for.
You think?
We got Debbie and Kathy here now.
Hi, Antonio.
I want to make sure you can hear them both.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
There we go. I think we can hear them now. Can you hear them?
Okay.
All right. How you doing?
I'm
good. Good. So, what have we talked about so far?
Who they are, what they're about, and how they do their research.
Oh, well, that's good.
And about you, too.
Oh, yay!
That's our topic.
Yep. We're usually the topic.
Yeah, we do that on purpose, so go ahead.
All right. Well, Antonio, how about if you let us know about the rest of your team?
I can give you a quick synopsis. Right now, we have Paul. Paul's kind of like my acting deputy. And him and I are the ones that usually triage cases as they come in and come out. Paul, everybody's just from Maryland, pretty much, and Paul was, he's got his master's in applied physics, and works over at NASA, doing satellite engineering.
I'm going to be calling him.
Yeah, no kidding.
Okay. Josh is a MacGyver.
I got a Jersey, he's a retired Air Force pilot, pretty much dedicates the rest of his life now to MUFON. Great guy. If you look at his website, I have a link on my website. He by far, I believe, has the largest collection of UFOs in the world. So they range in the thousands. So I'm pretty sure he is credited as having the largest database of UFO photos in the world. So that's something you probably want to check out.
Great.
Craig's a retired professor. He's more of my researcher. So, we have, not everybody's a full investigator, is what I would call him. A lot of these cases require a lot of background research. So Craig is the one that normally does that for me. Craig is also like my sidekick. Normally when I go to conferences or speaking engagements, I can count on him. He's always there 100% helping me out, like setting up stuff, and so that's pretty cool. I also have Marsha, great investigator. She's in the media. She's the investigator she will shape the investigation so perfectly. She's a step-by-step investigator. And she's probably the one that when I have my probably most important cases, they either go to her or they go to Paul. Or if it's a joint case, she'll be the lead investigator. She's also a retired professor, and she's also one of my researchers. Nancy's also one of my junior investigators, so usually when I have a case, she's usually the second, and normally assisted by a more senior investigator. Wade's one of my newer investigators, and he's out of Old Slaughter, Jersey. And I specifically picked Ray for several reasons. He's been in ufology for some time. However, he just finished his graduate studies in psychology. And in the last few months, I noticed I was getting a trend of abductee reports. And initially, I really wasn't doing abductee reports for several reasons. I'm not a psychologist. A lot of these cases require people that need some type of medical psychological help.
Right.
I decided that, hey, I can at least, take the report, do an interview, and pass these cases to local areas where they can get some medical attention. And right now, Ray, he's on his fourth case, and if you go on the website, he's just done an incredible job on these close encounter cases. Charles, been looking at UFOs for decades now. He is one of my senior investigators. And his assistant is Pat. They normally work on the cases together. A newer investigator is Shane. Shane's out of Canada. So technically, he's one of my first international investigators. And the reason I picked him is because we get a lot of reports out of Canada. And thus far, I'm impressed with the reports that he's done. And then I have Terry, who's normally the photographer tech report. I also have two more investigators that should be coming on board this weekend. On Sunday, I'll be interviewing them. So hopefully by Monday, I'll have a total team of 15 people.
Sounds like you got a full team, man.
Yeah, I wish I had Matt here. You can see how I'm actually building the team. I initially started in Maryland, and I'm kind of expanding north and south along the eastern seaboard. So I've got investigators Jersey, PA, Maryland, Virginia, and hopefully by this weekend, I have all the way down to Florida.
That's cool. So tell us a little bit about how you differentiate a UFO compared to, like, an airplane.
First of all, one of the main things we want to do is educate the public that we use the word UFO interchangeably with extraterrestrial, and that I believe is, I thought, wrong. Unidentified means unidentified, so we can attribute a UFO to extraterrestrial.
Well, that's how I look at it.
In itself, what happened was, you know, we've got just years of the media, movies, just using the word interchangeably with UFOs, and now, the fact that you mentioned UFO, it's automatically associated with extraterrestrials. Second, how we differentiate is we look at the actual report. We look at the witness testimony, hopefully if they have a sketch or a photo, and we go through the investigative process trying to determine if that anomaly is a man-made object or UFO. Things that we look for naturally that might indicate that it's something man-made is usually flight characteristics, whether or not the report has, that the object has some type of collision lights, you know, like the standard FAA collision lights, red and green navigation lights. Those things is not something that typically would be associated with, if they exist, extraterrestrials. My conclusion is that there would be no reason whatsoever for an extraterrestrial to comply with FAA regulations.
That's a good point, but one question I do have, though, is what about, and I understand you can't talk about it, but what about experimental aircrafts?
Yeah, we get a lot of reports on, I will use the word amazing aircraft that are beyond the technology that we have. But I ask the question, did you see these lights? What was the flight characteristics? And when I get cases like, I saw a giant triangle that was two sizes of a football field, et cetera, I can't identify that, you know, and I don't think anybody else can. And those cases we normally close as unresolved and unidentified. We can't attribute an unidentified aircraft or flying object to an extraterrestrial if we have no evidence of whatsoever that they exist. You know, I mentioned earlier that evidence of extraterrestrial life is so elusive. You know, if there are a couple of handful reports of credible witnesses, once in a while you get a cheesy photo or video or whatever. But at the end of the day, you know, if I was in a courtroom, I probably would not be able to convince the jury beyond a reasonable doubt that aliens actually exist. You know, as a planetary scientist, that's something that life must exist somewhere else in the universe. But to say that there's little green men in silver suits, you know, running amok, that's a whole different story.
Running amok. So what do you think is your most credible case?
Well, it depends on what you mean by case. Are you talking about an abductee, an actual sighting of a report, of the world, you know, this... I would say probably, let me check out my cases here.
They're all on your website. You have all those cases, your full,
all those cases, you know, and I do my number crunches, you know, most of the time. I'd say that 92% of those cases there are pretty much explained as man-made objects, natural phenomena, or a hoax.
Mm.
And a very small handful, and any organization will tell you this, it's a very select few of a handful that are unidentified. Big organizations will tell you they're like at the 2 or 3% that are unidentified. Right now, my numbers are 8%. You know, that number might change either way. I'd say probably the one or two top cases that I have is a Niagara Falls case, which is 12-001. That was a giant black triangle. Two main witnesses, however, multiple reports on Canadian newspapers of people seeing the same object. So, you know, we went through the investigative process. We interviewed multiple people. We had investigated this case for months, and the conclusion was that we believe that they did see something. There's no information to indicate that they didn't. However, we just don't know what they saw. You know, we can't attribute what they saw extraterrestrial. So we close the case as there's credible information that multiple people saw this giant black triangle in Niagara Falls, but however it's closed as unresolved and unidentified. So.
Right, so that makes sense. You mentioned earlier MUFON. Can you
sure.
Brush up on that and let people know what exactly that organization is?
I'm a member of MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network. They're probably one of the biggest UFO organizations worldwide. Great organization. I initially went to them for the educational purposes to get the my MUFON certification as an investigator. Not that you need it, actually. But
yeah, I did it somewhere.
I go to their meetings every month. Most of my team members are part of MUFON. It's a great organization. I learned a lot from them. If you type in UFO, submit a UFO report, normally they're one of the first ones that come up, and that's what they do. They collect a lot of reports, and they investigate a lot of reports, but my team does it just a little different. Not necessarily that we're trying to take over MUFON or trying to take over the UFO investigations business, but we just want to be part of the network itself and help solidify ufology.
Right, so you pretty much just try to find UFOs. It's not about the aliens or anything like that, right?
Well, we don't find them. I explained earlier, we're not a necessarily UFO chasing team that sits around up in the national park for days waiting for something to show up. The likelihood of that happening is 1 in 1,000,000. So we're investigators. We receive reports. We triage them to determine whether or not a case is should we open up a case or not. We have a process, as I explained earlier. We have an investigative cycle that starts from receiving the case to doing initial research, interviewing the witness multiple times, or interviewing the multiple witnesses multiple times, verifying their backgrounds and their credentials, collecting evidence if there's any, whether it's photo, video, voice recordings, etc. And on some select cases, we actually go out, like I did this past week into Baltimore, and look for evidence of an alleged landing or any type of physical evidence that allegedly was left by an associated report.
Okay, well, what about abduction? How often do you deal with somebody who claims to be abducted, and how do you go with finding evidence that, yes, this person, not only do they believe that it happened, but there's evidence to follow through? How often does that happen?
Often, I say I've only had five abduction cases. Three, I refer to local MUFON investigators because just based on the initial interviews that I've done is that these abductees, and it's normal that they do have stress in their life, psychological background, psychological stresses that I cannot deal with because I am not a psychologist, I'm not a therapist, and I would probably be the wrong person, and it's not fair to the witness, so they need actual professional help. One case that I'm really interested in is in out of, it actually happened in Jersey, but the witness lives in Pennsylvania now. The case is still open because he alleges he was abducted, has missing time, and has allegedly a metal implant in his leg that several doctors in the Jersey area have not been able to identify. That's a strange case in itself. So that one I'm kind of keeping open because there might be some physical evidence in the future there. And then the last case I just received just a couple days ago, I haven't opened the case yet because just based on the initial emails that I've gotten, it indicates that the person probably does need some type of professional psychological help. Just based on, the report talked about possible alleged abuse in the family, things like that. That has nothing to do with UFO investigation.
Okay, so what kind of questions do you ask these people that have been abducted? I mean, how do you go about finding out if it's just a dream? Because sometimes if you're on medication, you feel like you're dreaming what's going on and it ends up happening, or it was ended up being real. How do you differentiate between somebody who's just stressed or taking sleeping pills or is on an antidepressant or anything like that, pain pills, compared to somebody who...
Yeah, the interview part, I won't go through all of them, but, for the abductee cases, it's anywhere between, depending on how we, what the bulk of the report is, it could be anywhere between 10 questions to 30 or 40 questions. And we said, you know, yeah, you're right. And we asked everything about any type of sleep disorders, any type of stresses in life, any type of medications, have they been, you know, admitted to any type of wards, et cetera. And we and after we look at the case, we triage it, and we look at, and obviously the type of abduction that they're alleging, you know, basically it's always really the same type of scenario when you look at these abduction cases. We're not trying to, when it comes to abduction cases, they're very difficult to investigate. You know, other people tell you, oh, yeah, you can do hypnosis and all that stuff. But I
hypnosis.
Yeah. Earlier, we are a nuts and bolts UFO team. We necessarily don't do the alleged abduction. So when we do get those type of reports, we take the report, we interview the witness, and we usually look for a local investigator that does those type of report investigation, and we just pass the case on to them.
Okay. Huh, well, that works. Yeah, and then you have a huge network of people that can help, and everybody can get together and find truth, I guess, right?
Well, that, I think, is the whole point, is finding some type of truth.
And we, you know, we tell them, hey, we found a local a person that deals with this kind of stuff, ufology / you know, alien abductions, and I think they're in a better position to help you. And normally they accept that. They're like, oh, great, thanks, Antonio, man. And once in a while we'll hear back from them, hey, just so you know, things are going great, stuff like that.
Well, I think follow through, even if you pass it on to somebody else, is important, so that way you can keep it up on your files. And
you know that. I know the people you handed to are actually taking care of.
Yeah, I know that they're really taking care of.
But I don't mean to sound everything hunky-dory. You know, sometimes we do get, that's why I'm careful with personal information, and you know, and my team's very careful as well. Sometimes we do get people that, you know, send us reports and call us, and they're just way off, you know, the other end of the spectrum. You know, I don't know if you were crazy or not, but you know, there's sometimes that we feel like we're getting harassed by people that you know, are just, you know, they, no matter what you tell them, they've been abducted, and they've got strange dreams. And I used to get calls at 3 or 4 in the morning, Antonio, the aliens are in my hotel room, you know, things like that.
We understand that.
We're right there with you.
We've all dealt with that. So if you know, it's not with UFOs. And they not have your personal number.
But that's not what we do. You know, that we're in the nuts and bolts investigative team. And that's one of the reasons I got the hotline number now and emails. And I don't put out personal information that could harm my team, you know. So
if somebody wanted to get a hold of you, either to learn more about you or to contact you about something that they believe they experienced, how would they go about doing that?
It's really easy. On my website, there's a link that says report a UFO. It's a very short form on purpose. You know, some websites, you go to report a UFO, and it's 10 pages long, and people go, oh, I don't want to do that. But you have a very basic form, the who, what, why, et cetera, and a quick synopsis. And then when I get the report, you know, it goes straight to my iPhone or my email system. Then I look at the report, and I do what I call a preliminary investigation, and then I pass it on to the investigator if necessary. We also have the hotline number, which is also on our website, also on our Twitter, the 202 number. So anybody can call. It's not manned on purpose. That way we can just, we don't want to wake up at 3 in the morning answering calls. So I go straight into the voicemail. Same purpose, you know, we look at the case or the report on the phone, and I triage it and pass it on. So multiple ways, and regardless if we open the case or not, I immediately respond to the person who submitted the report, whether or not we're going to open the case, usually within 72 hours.
Right. So the people that you deal with, I mean, they're not all needing professional help.
They're not all quack, legitimate.
No. I can, a really good handful of cases, maybe more than half, where I know the witness was very credible. I heartily believe that they actually did see something. There was no reason to believe that they're doing a hoax or they're looking for attention or anything. So there are people out there that are actually seeing things. What it is, we don't know. I don't like, every time I close an investigation and I sit down with the witness, is I leave it open to them, you know. I say, look, it could be this, it could be that. But I never leave a case and I say, yep, you saw an alien. Because that's not right, it's not fair, and it's not true.
Right, so I have a question. I was online and I was researching a whole bunch of UFO stuff and evidence and belief theories and all that. I really thought that the power-up things were really cool, like when people do the lasers and they shine them in the air, and I saw videos of that. And I know you base everything on facts, but what do you think about that? I mean,
yeah, what's the theory behind it?
Or maybe a possibility that could be an experimental craft or something like that that's actually not really a UFO.
Yeah, for the laser pointers. And then there was one, I think, today of a... They find, like, the big old flashlight up there, you know, their 10 million candle watt, whatever, and then it actually made the aircraft, whatever it was, their lights dim. So what's the theory behind that and the power-ups and things like that?
You know, I'm not sure what you're talking about. I wish I didn't. I probably have to take a look at that video that you're talking about. What I explained earlier was that, you know, evidence... that extraterrestrial exists is very difficult to actually find right now. You gotta be careful on the internet. There's a lot of garbage. It's just littered with, you know, things that make you want to believe that, yeah, they exist. Look at that video on YouTube. That's an alien.
Well, a lot of people want to believe that because they don't feel that we're the only ones in the whole universe or the whole other galaxies and beyond.
I watched another thing today, and it was actually one of your videos on YouTube, that the gal was talking about the UFOs. There was a cluster of them, talking about hanging out by the power lines to, quote-unquote, power up. What's the theory behind that? Do they take our power? I mean, or is that, I don't understand that.
You know, you have to be careful what you see out there. There's a theory that some aliens or some UFOs do, like, you actually absorb the power line, or even worse, that there's been reported UFOs over, like, nuclear power grids and stuff like that, where they're absorbing the energy. I don't necessarily buy that, again, because there's just really no hard evidence out there, you know, that these guys actually exist. They might be, there might not be enough, but, you know, where is it is one of my questions. I want to find it. That's the reason I set this up. But I cannot, you know, investigate. I cannot, you know, I need to stick to facts, not the feelings or intuitions or speculation. And not necessarily see, obviously, what's out on the internet. Because, you know, these days with, you know, a little bit of software and a little bit of cryptography, there's a lot of good footage out there that it'll make you believe that it's out there.
Yeah, well, I just was wondering what the theories are to help people differentiate between reality and...
There's probably a lot of different types of theories on that, actually, because...
That's what you gotta look at, is that as, you know, one of the studies I did was that as technology advancements move, so does the human psychology move. If you look post-World War II, most UFO reportings were just officers. And you need to look at the advancements in technology in the 40s and 50s, where a lot of the developments in the Air Force, CIA, etc., a lot of their aircrafts were saucer types.
Right.
In the 50s, during the Cold War, we started seeing the reports on the boomerang and UFOs. Same thing, if you look at advancements in technology, the aircraft we were building in the 50s and 60s were boomerangs. And now we're entering the era of the black triangles and the UFOs. you look at estimates now of, you know, the 80s and 90s, we've got stealth bombers, stealth fighters, all the aircraft and UAVs that look like black triangles.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. What about the stealth bomber? When that came out and it was being tested at Area 51 and out here in Utah, okay. People, where they seen an aircraft, you know, and a UFO. And
yeah, in Dugway, too.
Yeah, Dugway, and they all swore up and down that it was, you know, obviously unidentified. We didn't know what it was. But, I mean, there were a whole bunch of stirs, you know, just everything stirred up about there's a UFO. You know, there's all these flights. They just have an erratic flight pattern, and they hover, and then they go. So, I mean,
I've even heard things about, you know, government testing on floating ships, like
they
know, kind of absorb their surroundings, and so you can't see them.
Oh, it's like a chameleon?
Yeah.
I want one of them.
So, I mean, it could be possible. I don't know, but
I look at the mindset of man, and how we want to believe. So, another good example that I looked at was that, you know, in as the space, as we look further out into the universe, our mind regarding UFOs also changed, because initially, you know, we were closed, or a closed civilization, and so the aliens were initially, you know, from Mars or Venus, and as we learned that the universe was actually bigger, all of a sudden the aliens are now from a different universe, and now that we know that the universe is, you know, the observable universe is almost infinite, now all of a sudden the aliens are from a different dimension, or et cetera. So as the universe expands, even our thoughts about where these guys come from also changes, because we want to believe that they're out there. So, you know, so I think that most UFO reports, not UFO, but ufology in the last 7 years has been a convergence of a lot of things. It's been the advancements of man-made technology, the psychology of ufology, and also, you got to look at how technology actually shapes investigations. So our processes of investigating UFOs is getting better, and the reports are becoming more conclusive that they're man-made or natural phenomena.
Now, I understand that you guys do a lot with aerial, but have you ever done any research on, you know, the crop circles or anything like that?
Often, and we got what's the back in November. I went out there, you know, for the report, if the crops are out there, we were like, ooh, yeah. So we all went out there, and we spoke with the farmer, and it was him. It was his actual farming equipment that did the, it wasn't actually a crop circle. It just looked like a big square or something. but one of the things I was telling one of the MUFON investigators the other day is that you also need to look at, he was asking Antonio, why does North Carolina have a lot of UFO reports, but in Maryland there's very little. You know, we get maybe 3 or 4 reports a month, whereas North Carolina gets, he was telling me, 20, 30. I tell him, well, you need to look at the reason. Maryland and the D.C. area has a very restricted airspace, so even man-made aircraft have patterns that, flight patterns and vectors that are out of the area. So, you know, it would be stupid to say, well, that means that the aliens also, you know, complying to our airspace restrictions.
No, that means more things have been...
If they were trying to be on board.
Yeah. I would say you get 30 or 40 in one area and nothing in another area with the flight restrictions, it would be because you're misdiagnosing or mis... What is the word? Yeah. You're not getting the right thing. It's really an aircraft.
Human-made. For Maryland, for several reasons, it's a small state, a lot of restrictions, not even a whole lot of man-made reports. We do get once in a while UAV reports, and that's because here at the Tungsten Naval Station, the X-47B, which is the Navy drone, they do their primary testing down here, so...
Yeah, that's another thing I didn't really think about until you just mentioned it, but just the drones, I mean, they're a lot smaller, they're not manned, so they can probably go a lot of different angles, a lot of different speeds, a lot quicker, because you don't have that velocity that the human body can endure. Have you come across that?
Exactly, and, you know, just last week when I was in Virginia Beach, I gave a brief for a presentation called Rise of the Drone, and how the advancements in aerial in UAVs man, they have increased reports in this area, you know, dramatically. And I told them, hey, you know, here in Maryland alone, you know, there's dozens of facilities, defense contractors that are they're in competition with each other. So they're developing and building and flying these drones all over the place. And, you know, I kind of left it as a joke. Hey, here's a website that has all these help wanted ads for UAV pilots, drone pilots, etc. They're all in Maryland. So, you know, we put those together, you know, 30 or 40 help wanted ads. You got all these drone facilities and airports in the area. You're going to get a lot of these drone UFO reports.
Now, wouldn't it be interesting if you had a series like, say, maybe 6 or 7 drones that fly in patterns? You know what I mean? Kind of like human ducks. You know, they fly in the V shape, but they're individual animals. And don't they kind of switch positions through their flight? You know, the strongest one goes to the front, the most tired one goes to the back. Something kind of along those lines.
Yeah, I don't really see any cases like that. I do get once in a while that they look like orbs or something, like 3 or 4 in a pattern. You know, making these exotic maneuvers. First, ducks in a row, and then they're zigzagging us and stuff like that. I've got a couple of cases. I closed them and let them resolve. But interesting cases in and of itself. I just don't know what they are.
Well, how do you find out, how do you recognize it's a drone compared to something else? How do you know it's a drone?
Some of the reports that we got in, they've identified seeing collision lights. They identified it flying in a vector that we know is used by military aircraft. Just you get a lot of tail watchers. You know, tail watchers, people that just camp out, you know, to look at these drones down in the protection area. So we look at, you know, when we get a drone report, we'll have 4 or 5 people reporting that same report, and they'll tell us, well, you know, it did have some engine noise. We did see some collision lights. And it wasn't usually making any type of erratic pattern maneuvers and stuff like that.
Okay, so we know that you are going to just be here for an hour tonight with us. Why don't you go ahead and tell us what your most challenging case has been so far?
Oh, good one. I would say probably the one that I have open now, it's out of the UK. You know, the guy reported that he had a webcam, infrared webcam on his roof, and I think I posted that video, you know, on purpose, because I want as much input from everybody in the world. So he sends me the report. I look at it. They look at, you know, it looks like a perfectly round orb moving in a westerly direction. Normally, you know, I would say it looks like a bug or something. But it, you know, I used every type of software that I could possibly get my hands on to try to analyze the 6 photos, and I just don't know what it is that I reached out to multiple communities out there. I've passed the lead to local paranormal groups. I've even passed it to, like I explained earlier, to an entomology group to see if it's an actual insect. So my commitment to the witness was, yeah, I'm not just going to close this because I don't know what it is. Perhaps somebody out there can actually identify for me. So this is the case that I've opened for a while now, going on 3 months. Case where I know the witness is credible. He's been interviewed multiple times. We have some type of evidence from the camera, and it's interesting that I passed it on to other teams and other organizations, and they just don't know what it is.
That's fascinating. And it's good that you can collaborate.
Collaborate.
One of those days.
Now, just out of curiosity, do you think you've ever had a case where you come across something where you believe it might be some type of a spacecraft? Or have you been able to explain or at least theorize what everything up to date?
I would probably say, what's a good case? I wouldn't say necessarily an alien craft, but I would venture to say that it is an aircraft that I just don't have any type of information to suggest that it might be something we have. You know, when somebody tells me that they saw a black triangle that was 300 feet long and it made no noise whatsoever, You know, I'm not an aero, you know, specialist or anything like that, but when I look at that, that type of aircraft or, you know, object, whatever it is, you know, I have to leave a little room to speculate, well, maybe it is something, that is not man-made. But I can't, you know, I like leading to that conclusion, but, I can't identify it, so it has to remain unidentified. But yeah, I always go back to that Niagara Falls case where this thing, you know, that's 300 feet long, making no noise whatsoever, coming out of the water, it's just something that will leave anybody to believe. I don't think we have anything like that.
Oh, I don't know. My sister saw something like that.
Yeah.
And she said the same thing. It covered the whole entire sky.
Well, and then she got some things in her mouth.
Yeah.
And they couldn't figure out what it was. So my question is, do you believe that there are aliens, there are other worlds with life?
Right. Do you allow yourself to even go there?
Yeah. As a planetary, as a guy who studied planetary science, the universe is huge. I believe that there has to be some type of life out there. What type of life? I don't know. I don't speculate on that. I can't, you know, the universe, every day we're finding solar, you know, systems out there that have planets, you know, that are orbiting their sun. I believe the number is in the hundreds now. But what type of life? I don't know. You know, I leave that open to a lot of imagination.
imagination is important.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
The mass, you know, the distances between a lot of these so-called systems are just in the millions of light years, and to travel from one of those systems to here would literally take millions of years, even at the speed of light. And at some point, you have to think, has any type of civilization actually developed that type of technology? And B, you know, have they visited us? Maybe they haven't.
Right.
But I don't like to entertain things that I still think is science fiction. You know, things like traveling beyond the speed of light, interdimensional travel, things like that that are physically impossible. Or at least
so far that we know,
it's impossible. But, you know, there's a lot of theories out there, so that there must be millions of or, you know, intelligent life out there. But if there were, either they're ignoring us and not visiting us, or they're just simply too far to reach.
Right. So there is one case that I do want to ask about. When you talk about UFOs and aliens, you're inevitably going to get MIB, you know, the Men in Black. You do have one of those cases out there, and you haven't been able to explain that or identify what people believe are Men in Black. Can you brush on that before we let you go?
Sure. Actually, I can stay another 15. You don't have to rush me. Yeah, really, what I have a case is case out of Niagara Falls, where, you know, I'm not going to, okay, we had the Black Triangle, et cetera, but more importantly, soon after that, allegedly two Men in Black came and you know, came into the hotel, pretty much harassed the staff. We're looking for the main witness of the UFO report that was submitted. Hung around for about 30 minutes and took off. So, you know, we interviewed several witnesses, you know, very credible hotel staff manager, chief of security, et cetera, and they believe that what they saw was two Men in Black. The description that they gave was, you know, it's on my website, that they were twins, they were tall, they had bright eyes, things like they never blinked, very strict-looking men, in a harassing manner. And they sent us the video footage. And one of the things I like to concentrate on is that the video itself is proprietary, it's the software. So it's not something that you can just, put together as a hoax and, you know, put it out there. We actually had to get, call the company itself, try to get the software to actually read the data. And in the video, you know, it's very hazy, obviously, just like most cheesy surveillance
right.
videos.
I've seen it today. It was pretty...
can barely make them out, and we leave it at that. We don't know. We can't prove or disprove that it's a hoax or not.
Well, there's some controversy behind it that I was reading on the internet today. There were some people speaking out against it and for it, actually.
And that's ufology. You're going to get a handful of people who are, no matter what you tell them, little green men exist, and then you're going to have the other handful that's going to tell you, well, maybe they don't exist. But it's the same thing for this case. I've gotten a lot of good feedback, great investigation, oh my God, Men in Black is this, to feedback that Antonio the scam, he's promoting the Men in Black video that's coming out this summer. You name it.
Yeah, I didn't read that one. But it's coming out this summer.
Brought to you
guys. Brought to you guys. Very real phenomena.
That's great.
But I can't tell you that those are Men in Black. All I can tell you is I got a report. I got a video that supports that. I got credible witnesses that told me these guys came in. More importantly, I've got staff that quit their job because they were just fearful of what happened. All those guys, Men in Black, yeah. Are they humans or aliens? I don't know. I don't know if it's a hoax. It's a very interesting case. I've gotten probably over 20, maybe 30 organizations throughout the world who've opened the case themselves using this video. I passed them the lead. It's still open for interpretation of what happened. So
I think that's what all paranormal cases are. They're all open for interpretation. But that's what I'm trying to do is find some type of solid evidence, solid ground to stand on.
Just the other day, somebody was asking me, the same thing with the paranormal. We got all these EVPs and stuff like that, but then you've got a handful of people say, oh, that's all fake, they don't exist,
Well, one of the things that I've experienced through my research and everything that I've done is, I mean, we could be on an investigation to where we can feel the energy, we can kind of personally experience a lot of the activity that's happening around us. And say, for example, we catch a photo of something that just, completely floors us because we were there, we knew what happened, we knew the situation, and there's no reason why this thing would appear in the photo. To us, it's without a doubt we caught something, but we could show it to four or five people, and half of those people will immediately say, no, it's fake, no, it's that,
You photoshopped it.
Yeah.
I have a great program for photoshopping that will tell me things in Photoshop. I really like that.
But you could have the best piece of evidence, in your opinion, of something that you caught, but it could be just disregarded by so many people,
Sure. I'm in cases where, I have an analytical process to analyze a photo. And, by golly, yes, it's a lens flare. Here's the algorithm, here's the math. This is a classic, photo analysis, how, professional investigations do it. And no matter what you tell the witness, they'll tell you, no, it's wrong, Antonio, that's a UFO. What drives me crazy sometimes, I'm like, I'll go outside and recreate the same exact footage. The same scenarios and the same camera settings, and here it is, wow, identical, and nope, it's a UFO, and I respect that, this is not serious stuff, really, this is a ufology, you're going to get one end of the spectrum that completely believes that what's going on, and then you're going to get the other end of the spectrum that will debunk everything, so I try to stay in the middle, and very open to everything, my team is stick to the investigative process, shape the investigation based on that process, stay away from conspiracy websites and things that derail your investigation, and come to a conclusion that we all, that seems reasonable. I tell my team, sometimes we put hours to this and, a lot of hard work, and I tell them, hey, step back a little bit, this is not a homicide case,
It's a passion, though. Sometimes when you're passionate about something, you will.
Well, and everybody's so interested in finding the solid evidence, that one piece that is going to blow everybody's mind. That's what we're all looking for.
That's why a lot of these cases, I keep them closed as unresolved because I always go back to them. Because I'll get a report that's similar to one that I closed, and I've gotten cases that I had to reopen because somebody else reported the same incident. So you gotta keep an open mind in these type of things. But I also stress that what makes our team different is that we don't want to be thought of as like a folk club. That's not what we do. We don't sit around and eat popcorn and watch B movies and speculate that the government hiding stuff. We're investigating UFO reports.
Hey, what's wrong with popcorn and beer and maybe?
Same thing. I guess that's popcorn.
and we understand what you're saying, but yeah, there's got to be middle ground of belief and skepticism, I think.
Well, I think it partially keeps everybody balanced. And I mean, if everybody was believers or everybody was skeptics, you wouldn't have that balance. You know what I mean? And I think when you have both sides, it pushes the believers a little bit further, but the skeptics have to tend to bend a little bit more often as well.
Yeah, well, you have to know that just because you think this doesn't mean that's what it is. Or just because you think it's not doesn't mean that's not what it is.
Right, but you're going to come across those people that no matter what you do, like Antonio was saying, they're not going to even consider changing their opinion or even look into it further, which is okay.
Yeah, I have that terminology. You got two different types of skeptics. You got the open-minded skeptics and the closed-minded skeptics.
Right.
And, you know, to me, that makes so much sense because we've met skeptics that have come in and experienced something and said, okay, well, I'm not saying I'm a believer, but you guys have opened my eyes a little bit more.
Right, yeah. Well, you've been that person.
I was tech-oriented. I just relied on my equipment. But I had that one investigation that really just knocked me on my butt. And ever since then, I was like, okay, yeah. So if it's strong enough, I might be able to fill it. But I'll still charge. I'll still go right into that dark corner and call it out. So.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of harder, I think, to deal with things in the air.
Yeah. Far away. You can't, walk to it. Up there.
I'll give you a paper clip, some aluminum, I'll fill the crack and I'll be able to shave that sucker down, all right?
It's true. He's our MacGyver.
Well, have you, when you're doing these UFO cases, do you ever take one of those helicopters with the cameras on them and stick them up in the air, Antonio? See what's up there?
Oh, because, like I mentioned earlier, we don't necessarily go out in hopes of standing out there for days and waiting for something to come out, because the likelihood of that happening is one in a million. Next month, I got invited actually to North Carolina. Apparently there's a group of abductees that every time they get together, they're able to manifest a UFO and it shows up. So I've been to go witness that, and I didn't tell you I'm very excited.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Taking helicopter to fly it up in the air, like the little blue ones.
No.
Get out of it. Get close to it, see what's there.
I don't want to violate any type of laws, so yeah, I wouldn't do that.
It's a toy, it's okay.
No, it's a toy, it's not a bomb or anything.
It's okay.
So cross the line to Area 51 and stuff like that.
I'm not asking you to do that.
I will. I'm just kidding. So what's one of the closest cases you've had towards Utah? I mean, as far as coming to this side of the country.
I have a couple of things on the bucket list. One of them was, like I mentioned earlier, we need to get out of our chairs and hit the field. February and March, I went out to Nevada and did my documentary on Area 51. So I was out there, did a lot of filming, did a lot of interviews out there and finished the documentary a couple weeks ago.
Right.
And I'm going to show that off at the Mid-Continental Paranormal Conference here in Kansas in August. What that's done is off to the next, I would call the Area 51 of Utah, which is a Skinwalker Ranch. People tell me there's stuff going on there, and the other hand tell me, it's kind of quiet, nothing's going on there. But it's one of those things on my list that I'd like to go out and see for myself.
Me too.
A lot of local groups have tried to get out there, and
we just can't do
it. No, they just don't. They don't care to let people in to run around and kind of goof off in their area.
Run amok.
I love that phrase. Back to Area 51, really quick. I've heard rumors that they're actually tearing the place down and either going further underground or moving it completely. When you were out there, what did you experience?
You look at the kind of activity. You look at what they're doing out there. They're doing a lot of advanced research. It's just classified. It's national security stuff that we really have no business of knowing. And I hate to preach to the choir. The things that they do out there is usually for our benefit. You know, it's for national defense security purposes. And one of the reasons that you have to hide this stuff underground is because we've got just dozens of satellites that are orbiting Earth right over that area, from whether it's the Russians, the Chinese, or the Koreans, whatever, trying to conduct espionage on what type of technologies we're developing.
So do you think they're just going further underground then?
There's satellites out there that probably can, use a type of radar or spectral imaging to try to find out what's underground, but the more advanced satellites get, the deeper you have to hide your stuff, so...
Right. So we have a listener who is in our chat room, and I know that we've talked about this before, how a lot of things seem similar, or could be similar, but we do have a question, and they're asking if you believe that there, or could be, a connection between paranormal, like ghosts or spirits, and maybe UFOs and aliens, etc.
I think maybe. I don't know yet. But when I was in Virginia Beach the other day, giving my presentation, some lady spoke that she believed that extraterrestrials were actually demons. So she, from a religious perspective, they didn't believe extraterrestrials were from a different planet, but that they were actually demons cast upon us to bring havoc. So, I get a lot of cases that there's just these weird orbs. Two of my cases were actually at a cemetery. I don't know if you were looking at my tweets this weekend. So I actually went up to a cemetery to look at orbs over there. So the strangeness behind these cases alludes to that there might be paranormal activity related to them. So, yeah.
Well, yeah, and I know that I listened to the Men in Black video, how there's the commentary over it, and I talked to you, and you were saying something about how the witness is now having paranormal issues.
According to the witness, right after the Men in Black dissertation, the household, his wife, his kid, started getting poltergeist and paranormal activity in the house. And more importantly, they decided to move out, and it still followed them. And this happened after the actual Men in Black visitation. So, and he's telling me he's seen everything from the apparition of a little boy, doors slamming, things moving, and all this happened after the Men in Black visitation. So, very strange. I believe the guy is very credible. I have interviewed him multiple times, and it's just strange.
I wonder if it has something to do with that experience that he had. It kind of made him more aware of the surroundings, so he's actually paying more attention now than he may have been prior to that.
That happens a lot too.
And I noticed that a lot of these cases, when people, whether it's an abduction or they see something that it follows them for the better part of life, and right, that once they're open to it, that they usually have multiple sightings throughout their life, and there's a sensation that they're part of a select group that are they're the only ones that are meant to see these sightings, and that they're usually being followed throughout the rest of their lives because multiple sightings, but from the same witness.
kind of like they were selected for one reason or another.
That's right. Like you're saying the selected group.
Now, another question I had for you, it's kind of a little bit off the subject, but when you're interviewing people and you're talking with them, do you factor in their religious beliefs at all, or is it just strictly their experience?
I don't straight up tell them what, you know, ask them what, you know, what their religion is or what their belief is in extra special. I try to save those questions for the end. That way I don't want to steer their responses to what I want them to be. So those type of questions are usually, I ask them the questions that are on my investigative sheet, and then we go into the personal discussions. I ask them, so what are your beliefs in extraterrestrials? What are your religious beliefs? And things like that, you know.
And does that change anything as far as the factor of your research on that particular client?
No, because my goal is to identify the object that they physically saw.
Okay. I was just curious because if you're looking at their psychology a little bit in depth, you know, understanding the religion behind it might kind of sway the way they view the experience.
So. For credibility purposes, sometimes I do factor that kind of stuff in. For identifying the object itself or the activity, I tend not to factor those in.
And also, you know, the human mind, when we experience something, we don't always remember the details. You know what I mean? So do you have a lot of times where somebody thinks they experienced something, but by the time they're talking with you, they're talking with somebody, they don't necessarily remember if there was crash lights on it or, you know, those fine details?
I would say about half of the cases are normally like that. But I always have them tell the story first, and without me interrupting, and then I go into the trying to, I guess, from an inside out perspective, identifying the aircraft, the object, without me telling them anything. I don't ask them, well, did you see a red light? Did you see a blue light? I'll keep it simple. Like, did you see any type of lights? And then the third round of questions, I'll come back and start. Seeing if they can actually sketch the actual aircraft, the actual objects themselves. Usually it takes two or three interviews, and the person sometimes gets some of the memory starts to come back.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're heading up here on a quarter after, and I know that you have an early morning start. I do have a question, though. This Area 51 documentary, say somebody can't make it to Kansas, would they be able to get it or even view it after that?
Yeah. You know, most likely it's going to be on my website. It'll be on the website, and usually I'll hand out a few freebies out there, the groups and stuff like that. It's not going to be for sale. I'm not in it for monetary purposes. I've gotten, you know, emails and telling just do this to get rich or whatever. Or to be on a TV show, that's not my motive. But, you know, whatever $3 I make a week.
Yeah, we're right there with you.
It's an expensive hobby.
So, we are going to go ahead and cut the break here shortly, but if you don't mind, I'd like for you just to kind of say again, how can people look into your investigations? How can they contact you? And, you know, what additional information would you like to put out there?
Actual report. Best thing is to go to aerial-phenomenon.org. There's a link in there that gives you the capability to submit a report and attach any type of photo or video that you might have. We follow up with it within 72 hours. If that's not a possibility, we have a hotline now, which is 202-905-0421. Or just contact me directly, which is director@aerial-phenomenon.org.
And where are you guys based out of?
Annapolis, Maryland.
Okay. Just to go back to Skinwalker here, just real quick, then we're going to break. But what is it? Haunted Highway with Ozzy Osbourne's son.
Yep.
Is going to be on Tuesday. It's a new series. They actually just did Bear Lake Monster out here in Utah. And they... Tuesday is going to be on Skinwalker. I don't know if they got into the facility. I don't know if they got into
the actual
ranch or if they just do the outskirts. But that might be interesting for you to look into since you did mention Skinwalker.
So it's not a commercial at night, and it looks like, yeah, it's just the outskirts. But I'm still going to watch it,
Oh, yeah, plus if something's in the air, it doesn't matter if you're on the compound or on the property or not. You're going to see it up there, so.
Right. Yeah. Okay, well, Antonio, we really, really appreciate you coming on tonight.
Hope to have you on again.
Yeah, anytime.
Well, if I could tell everybody, my main goal is to educate the public on what ufology is, what ufology isn't. Hopefully one day we'll figure it out and we'll find the truth.
Right, that's the goal.
We definitely want to have you back on the show sometime and just kind of talk a little bit more about more of the cases you've done and the details, just about you guys and what you're all about. So.
Right, getting new cases.
That's right. Yeah, follow up on old cases.
Right.
You guys have my contact info, and I'll be more than happy to come back.
All
right. Thank you, Antonio.
You too.
Yeah,
good night too.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right, and that was Antonio with Aerial Phenomena, and we are going to cut to break now. So thanks again for listening to the Owl's Nest here on Utah Para Radio, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to Utah Para Radio.